Time for the Friday edition of Hancock and Kelly.
You two belong together.
Sponsored by Serta Pro Painters.
John Hancock, Michael Kelly on News Radio 1120, KMOX.
You're not John Hancock.
No.
It's Megan Shackelford in studio with me. Hey, buddy, how are you?
Good morning. I'm great.
So you have become like this green thumb person there
yes,
in South City?
I have. I'm really into gardening.
Gardening?
Very.
How do you do gardening in an urban setting in the backyard of a major city?
It's so much easier than you would really think. And it takes, I just think, some patience and willingness to go with the flow and see what works and what doesn't. But you know, at our house, we have a dog and a small child, so grass doesn't stand a chance, right? There's no right. way we're having this beautiful, lush, green yard, although we tried. Just didn't last. So we switched our attention to making it pretty in another way, and we've got all kinds of garden beds going. We brought lilies over from my fiance's mom's house that are decades old from Southern Illinois. It's
but
fun.
But you're growing food there, too,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I have a raised bed. I have been...
How do you keep these squirrels and rats and rabbits and everything else that exist in the city away?
I've never seen a rat. I will say the bunnies, you know, can't jump. So that's a win. The squirrels are a major problem. These squirrels, they have no fear. They care about nothing. They stare you right in the eye and steal your produce. They do not care about anything. I've tried a few little tricks, one of which is putting red pepper flakes scattered throughout.
And
I've seen a slight improvement. Apparently, yeah, they don't like the spiciness. And so they don't want to dig in there. And they don't always steal everything, but they like to hide their stuff in the soil. And so they're digging stuff up by accident, and then they do steal things. I am a huge fan of the Tower Grove Farmers Market, so I have relinquished certain produce to the professionals, and I focus on herbs and lettuces now.
You have a two-year-old?
Four and a half year old.
Is she out doing that?
Oh, yeah. She loves gardening. She helped me do a bunch of seeds. We started a cut flower garden this year so that we can do our own flower arrangements, and she helped me do all the seeds and plant our little seedlings, and she likes to remember the names. It's just a nice, very chill activity to do at home when you want to be outside, have something fun to do.
But even in the city of St. Louis, you can do it.
You can do it anywhere,
South
buddy.
City in a garden.
You
I
could do
over.
It on your patio.
My little patio?
I'm going to get you a planter box. You're going to become a green thumb.
She is Megan Shackelford. I'm Michael Kelly. You're going to be with you all till 11 o'clock. We're going to join John Hancock here shortly. My hero is coming in studio today. Wait till you hear his story. And guess what? It's not John Hancock.
KMOX, where every crack of the bat resonates with tradition, passion, and the spirit of Cardinals Nation.
New jolly old England. That's right. It's Megan Shackelford and Michael Kelly in for the Hancock and Kelly Show. Where's John Hancock? He's over in England, and he joins us now on the celebrity guest line. Hey, hey, my friend. How is Snooker World?
It's wonderful, mate. We're having a great time here in Sheffield. And at the moment, Stuart Bingham and Jack Jones are competing in the second session of the semifinals here at the Crucible Theater.
When do you go to the Crucible Theater today? Is it today or tomorrow?
It's tomorrow night. And it'll be the last semifinal session. It'll be the same two players, Bingham and Jones. So hopefully it's a close match. Otherwise, I might only see one or two frames. But man, we're just having a blast. And everybody said the food was not so good in England. We haven't had a bad meal.
Yeah. But when was the last time you found some food you didn't like?
Well, it's difficult. But we ate at Mama and Leone's for lunch today. I had the lasagna. Very good.
Ooh, very nice. Now, most people go to England and they get messed up because people are driving on the wrong side of the road. You do that here in America, so you probably are an expert driver, right?
I tell you, so the driving is not so bad, but crossing the street, I always look the wrong way to see if the car's coming because you're used to, looking to your left. And so almost got run over a couple of times. But other than that, it's been smashing.
John, I am so interested about the crowd there. Is there a bunch of camaraderie with other snooker fans? Are you all like high-fiving each other in the streets? Are you talking in the pubs? What's happening outside of the actual game?
So everybody here, we're the only Americans here.
Okay.
So we're kind of a novelty, and which is fun. And we're at the hotel, and all of the players are here. and all of the commentators and the whole snooker infrastructure is here at the Mercure Hotel. And so, and everybody's very friendly. We met half a dozen of the players, and they're all take pictures with you, so forth. And it's just been really, really nice.
Do snooker fans talk trash to each other,
No, not really. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot. So the only one that's really, Ronnie O'Sullivan's kind of a lightning rod. And there are people that really don't like him. He had a little bit of a meltdown the other day with the referee.
Uh-huh.
And he told the referee to chill out, and she said, "I'm quite chill."
So, Ronnie, he, as you pointed out to me, is the Tiger Woods of snooker.
That's right.
But he did not make it, huh? Unfortunately,
yeah, lost in the quarterfinals.
Wow.
And so we were expecting to see him in the semis, but he didn't make it. But he's still in town, they say. But I have not seen him. He's got a little shop here, one of these pop-up, apparel
merch. He's selling merch.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Do you wear merch? Are you wearing merch? Do they have scarves, like, for football? What's happening with the merch?
No, a lot of hoodies, a lot of sweaters, and a lot of the players have their own logos, so it's a lot of logo materials. And this is a big sport over here, snooker, and so, like, every cab driver in London, when I told them we were going to Sheffield, they were like, "Wow."
How was London?
London was great, man. What did we do, sweetheart? We did the Tower of London.
Ooh.
We did Windsor Castle.
Mm.
We took a day trip to the Cotswolds, which is I had a pint of ale, Michael.
Nice.
In a pub that was founded, and it's been a continuous pub since 937 AD.
Oh my word.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So that was really cool. And all these places in the Cotswold are all like 15th and 14th century structures. The actor, who's the actor? George Clooney's got a place in the Cotswolds.
Huh.
And and so does your boy Messi.
Oh, really? The soccer players over there. So, how awesome is that that you got to go run around and see Cotswold? What about you're into this royalty stuff? Did you go over and look at the Queen or the King and all that group?
We saw one of the ladies at the hotel actually saw King Charles a couple of days ago. And he's just resumed his official duties, I think, on Tuesday of this week. So he's back out and about, but we haven't seen Chuck. But we did take in Windsor Castle, which was amazing. Just the artwork alone in that place is just unbelievable. Walked all the way around Buckingham Palace because we got lost.
Imagine that.
And we did the Churchill War Room. So the underground bomb shelters where the war cabinet from 1940 till the end of World War II. So they basically lived and ate and slept there, and it's a remarkable facility. They kind of threw it together, and just as they finished it, London was bombed by the Germans.
Wow. John, isn't it shocking? Yeah. We're used to seeing something in America, and we think that if it's 200 years old, it's super old. I mean, you're walking into – I mean, there's homes in London that are 400 or 500 years old. It's just unbelievable, isn't it?
800 years. I mean, yeah, it's really something. We were at one of the rooms at the Tower of London. One of the ladies asked, "Is that an original beam?" He said, "Oh, no, no. That's probably from the 17th century."
Hey, you ran into some people from St. Louis, I understand.
Yeah. So we're at the bar in London, at our hotel bar. And, I'm chatty. So, people sitting at the next table, I looked over and I said, "Where are you all from?" And they said, "St. Louis." I said, "Are you kidding me? Whereabouts?" And they said, "St. Charles." I couldn't believe it. I mean, we literally live 20 minutes apart, and they are very faithful KMOX listeners.
Is that right?
So they knew us, and they, Chris and Amy and Charlie, they know everybody. And so we got along well with them and talked a little Cardinal baseball, bemoaning the state of the hitting. But, yeah, I mean, what a small world. There they were at the next table over. So that
Isn't
was
that
fun.
Great? And did you guys exchange numbers? Like, you're going to connect with them here in America now?
No. I can't remember his name.
But,
yeah, we hung out with a couple of dudes from Denmark last night watching the snooker.
Nice.
And, well, the Gord and Klaus. Yeah, they were great. They were great.
Hey,
we shared a pub.
What about what's going on in the world? Are you running into any of this Israeli-Palestine conflict protests over here in America? Yeah. All the college campuses are going nuts. I have to imagine that something similar may be happening there.
Oh, yeah. They had the first day we were really around was on Saturday, and there was a massive protest all up and down Parliament, all over downtown London. So, yeah, that's a big deal here. I'm struck by how much American political knowledge exists amongst the Brits themselves. They have a real sense of what's happening over here. And the consensus, by the way, among the cab drivers, is that Donald Trump's going to win the election. So,
well, you know, those cabbies, they listen to the radio more than anybody. So they must have that Fox News over there. So maybe they're listening to that.
What? They do, and they got the podcast and all of it, yeah.
Yeah. What about their politics? Does it feel like it's as angry and as tense, or is it just not as pervasive as it feels like it is here in America?
Yeah, it's not. Well, their campaign seasons are much shorter, and they're going to have a prime minister election about the same time as our presidential election. That's fairly rare that they occur at the same time. And just this week, they had the mayoral election in London, and he was reelected, although not wildly popular, but he's popular enough to get reelected.
John, is it expensive over there when you're like going to restaurants and you're buying stuff? Oh, how's the American dollar doing? And it doesn't feel expensive, huh?
No, in fact, I had lunch today, and lasagna and whatever, and it was like £19, so that's what, $23.
Yeah,
or whatever. So, yeah, we had we ate at the steak place last night, and we got the. So they had you get an appetizer, a steak, a side item, a sauce for the steak, and a dessert for like £35.
Nice.
Wow.
Yeah, sounds fairly affordable.
Yeah, and it was good food too. So I've been pleasantly surprised.
So
at the cost. Here.
When does this trip end, and we can kind of bundle in how did you do on your flight over? I know this was your first international flight. Talk me through it.
Not good, man. So the next day we got here. So we left St. Louis on Thursday at 5 p.m.
Uh-huh.
And we landed and got to our hotel. It was about 9 o'clock in the morning on Friday. And I didn't sleep at all on the plane. I don't think Georgianne did either much. So that first day, Friday, we walked around a little bit. Man, my back and my legs, my ankles, everything was sore, and I was tired and crabby. So Friday was rough. But since then, you know, it's been great.
Well, good for
We've
you.
We've done a lot.
When do you
of
come
walking.
Back?
So we get on the plane, Tuesday, I think it is. Tuesday morning over here, and then we land late Tuesday night, I guess.
Yeah.
In St. Louis.
And
yeah.
Friday, you'll be back here on the...
I'll be back Friday.
Yeah. Gene Evans is going to sit in for you this weekend. Megan Shackelford in here for you this morning, brother. Hey.
Yeah.
Our buddy Bryce Summery's coming into the studio as well.
That's awesome. Please send him my very best.
Yeah, we're going to tell Bryce's story, and he's truly one of my heroes, as are you, buddy. I hope you have a good time over there with Georgianne. Enjoy your birthday. John, I know this is the culmination of several years of kicking the snot out of me on the snooker table, so pretend like you're one of these champions this weekend.
I'm going to do it, big boy.
All right, we will see you next Friday. There it is. He is John Hancock coming to us live from London. That is Megan Shackelford. I am Michael Kelly. We're going to be with you all the way till 11 o'clock right here on KMOX.
Time for the Friday edition of Hancock and Kelly.
You two belong together.
Sponsored by CertaPro Painters. John Hancock, Michael Kelly on News Radio 1120 KMOX.
You're not John Hancock.
No.
Megan Shackelford in studio with me. She and I will be here till 10 o'clock together We're then going to join the Amy and Chris show.
Looking forward
together
to that.
And get the goof around with them. This Sunday, Hancock and Kelly, the television show, is on. No Hancock, Gene Evans back with me. Oh, no, John Hancock Jr. on with me this weekend on Fox 2 in St. Louis. And Megan, did you see this lawsuit? So there's a lawsuit going on now. You remember during the Super Bowl, right? We had the big Super Bowl parade and then the horrible shooting that happened afterwards.
Yes.
In those first couple of hours of the Super Bowl shooting, there was a lot of misinformation that went out online.
Mm-hmm.
There were three Missouri state senators who tweeted stuff, a picture of one gentleman saying that he was an illegal alien and he was the one who had done the shooting.
Yeah.
Neither was true.
Unbelievable.
The man was an American. He had nothing to do with the shooting.
Yeah.
But they put this out. They continued to stand by it. And now there is a lawsuit against these three state senators. And did you hear who their lawyer is?
Yeah. The state of Missouri.
The state of Missouri. And that got our heads scratching. So we're going to go to our legal analyst. He is none other than Brad Young of Harris Dahl Fishering Young. How are you, Bradley?
Michael, I'm doing great. And by the way, I think today is the inaugural show for the Megan and Michael show.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
I like Megan and Michael. That, you know, that has better alliteration than Hancock and Kelly.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And by the way, if you were in studio, it's a far better looking group than Hancock and Kelly, too.
Well, you know, listen, I'm not in studio, but I can already tell that.
Brad,
not a problem.
In all seriousness, Andrew Bailey is taking this lawsuit up, and I'm skeptical as being the political guy that this seems to be a political play. Is there a precedent of the state of Missouri defending state senators for a libel suit?
Well, we need to back up a second and lay the groundwork for what really ostensibly this is trying to be, and then I'll point out why I think it falls way, way short. There is a concept of legislative immunity. That is a concept. You know, we're seeing right now Trump arguing on the presidential level that there's presidential immunity. There is presidential immunity, but it's not 100%. It's not blanket. You remember Robert Menendez, Democrat senator from New Jersey, was prosecuted on fraud charges 10 years ago. And he skated on that by really asserting legislative immunity. And just 2 months ago, you know, he's the guy that had the gold bars now in his jacket. And he tried to assert legislative immunity for that. And the court rejected that just 2 months ago. So there is a specific legal doctrine for legislative immunity and presidential immunity. The question is, and the application of it is, Michael, is that it's not 100%. For example, going back to 1854, the Missouri Supreme Court held that there is legislative immunity. However, and since then, it's been upheld on numerous, numerous, numerous occasions. So we often see that even with regard to police officers who have immunity or limited immunity when it comes to what they do in the course of their jobs as police officers. But there's a phrase here that places a limit on it, specifically in Missouri, and that is they are shielded from liability except when their actions are, quote, from the Missouri Supreme Court, quote, willful and malicious, unquote. And that's the limitation that's placed on legislative immunity. So when this case moves forward, the question is going to be, were these texts willful and malicious, and were they done in the furtherance of legislative duties, or were they done out of a personal interest?
I mean, I think it's pretty clear to anyone who reads these texts that I find it a stretch to say these have anything to do with your legislative duty as a state senator. I know the attorney general has said they were directed at the president in regards to border security. It feels like a major stretch. Curious on your thoughts there. Also, I'm wondering if any of the other suits we've seen in the city of St. Louis, we've had voters sue elected officials for their behavior or blocking people on social media. Is there other social media precedents that's happened in other states or even in Missouri that may give an indication how protected Twitter behavior is when it comes to that kind of?
Yeah, interesting, Megan. You've actually touched on a very, very, very good topic. And that is a topic that has been at least so far resolved. The appeals are not done yet, but the courts have ruled already that individuals who are government officials cannot block people from posting when they use that Twitter account for public purposes. So if a person has a Twitter account, they and of course, Twitter meaning X, and they post anything that has to do with their public and official duties, then under the First Amendment, individuals cannot be blocked from that. So that is, at least for now, that is a resolved issue. But here, though, it is a stretch to say that criticizing or falsely naming someone as the person responsible for a shooting, the question is going to become, number one, is that really an official act? Now I'm going from analysis to opinion, okay? I have to change hats as I do this. But changing hats, I don't really see how criticizing or falsely naming a person for doing a shooting or being involved in a shooting constitutes an official act, number one. Secondly, if you look at the application of the Missouri Supreme Court under the willful and malicious, I think at this point, when you willfully point someone out without basis as being a shooter, that the courts could easily say that that is both willful and malicious, and in doing so would find that they do not have legislative immunity for those texts.
I think the big question I have is, are we as the voters going to know how much money this is costing us? Do you have any idea what type of budget we're looking at for the state to be defending these guys in court? And is this going to be something that's going to be transparent? We're going to be able to know as this moves forward? Because I think that should be a major question for every voter, how much we're spending to defend somebody's rant on Twitter.
Well, Megan, I need to tell you first and foremost, according to my wife, it's always good when the lawyers get paid. So I need to put that aside, number one. But kidding aside, number two, yes, that information would be absolutely available through a Freedom of Information or a Sunshine Law request, and that has to be transparent. So that information will be available. Also, keep this in mind. There's two parts to any sort of litigation when it comes to a situation like this. Number one, and this is true even in if you're in an automobile accident or you have insurance that covers any private individual for being sued. Number one, there's the cost of defense. And number two, there's the liability for damages. Those are two different sections of a litigation case. And so here, at this point, Missouri Attorney General Bailey has said that the state will take care of the cost of defense. But the second part is, if the courts rule that this is, in fact, willful and malicious, and it was not done in the furtherance of official duties, the question then becomes, can the state be held responsible or liable for damages if the court finds that those acts are not done in furtherance of their official duties? I think at that point, the liability would be on the own state senators, not on the state of Missouri, if the court finds that their actions were not official duties.
Right. And now, obviously, this is a Republican supporting Republicans. Here's a hypothetical. Megan Green got into some trouble out at WashU, said there was been some legal trouble there. Could she have the city council defend her, saying I was working on behalf of my public act? Because it sounds like it's left up to the interpretation of the attorney general. Would the same thing be that way at like local government?
Yeah. The concept, Michael, is exactly the same. And that is, it's up to the discretion of whichever entity is in charge of hiring counsel for those individuals. And so we could face the exact same situation from the opposite ideological spectrum, going from state legislators who are Republicans to city individuals who are Democrats. Yeah, ostensibly, the concept is identical. And it really does point out, Michael, and I'm glad you made that reference, because it points out that whether it's on the right or whether it's on the left, the issue still just explodes in terms of us saying, you know what, we shouldn't be paying for this.
Yeah, that, I guess that's where I think most voters are like, wait a minute, why are we having to pay for this stuff? And, you know, what's good for the goose is good for the gander. If somebody wanted to challenge the attorney general doing this, is there any way for them to challenge it? Let's say the Democratic Party wanted to say, hey, the state ought not be paying for this. What would they do?
Boy, you know what? That's something I've been thinking about all morning, Michael. And there has to be some degree of standing greater than merely being a taxpayer. For example, there were lots of lawsuits filed during the Vietnam War stating that we should not be using tax dollars to fund military activities in Vietnam. The courts routinely and in uniformly 100% of all court rulings found that those litigants did not have standing, meaning you can't just file a lawsuit for any reason. You have to have skin in the game. You have to have a pony in the race in order to file a lawsuit. And so courts have routinely held that just being a taxpayer and saying, I don't want my tax dollars being used for this activity, is not sufficient standing. So there would have to be some extreme mental gymnastics to come up with a way of saying that someone has standing to challenge this particular activity.
He is Brad Young. He's the legal analyst of KMOX. You can also find him at Harris Dowell Fisher & Young. And he ensures that all the lawyers always get paid. Brad, thanks so much for taking the time to visit with us. Checks in the mail, pal.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Michael and Megan. Great to be on your show.
All right. So that's Megan Shackelford. I'm Michael Kelly. We're going to talk about that protest at Wash U and the peaceful one that happened at St. Louis U and all these protests around the country after this on KMOX.
Now, back to Hancock and Kelly, sponsored by Insperity, HR that makes a difference, on News Radio 1120, KMOX.
I'm Michael Kelly right here. That's Megan Shackelford right over there. Megan, were you at any of the college protests over the last week?
Listen, I'm a voter, not a protester. Yeah. You know what I mean? I observe, I read, I vote. I got other things to do in my free time.
Do you have people you know in your life who've participated? I don't know any young folks who are participating in these protests.
No, I don't. I knew a few women, I think, who went to the women's marches, you know, from time to time. I think some of these protests that can appear to get a little more out of hand, I don't personally know anyone who's probably going to be in that space.
Yeah, just general first blush. A lot of people, I think, were upset about what happened at Washington University. I watched it a little bit on social media. It's not far from my house.
Mm-hmm.
Went by it. It seemed to me that people were given ample notice that they weren't going to be allowed to stay there. This was not going to be an encampment. They allowed them to exercise their First Amendment. But when they chose not to leave when asked on private property, they were upset with the way that people behaved, and I don't know. I didn't see some bad treatment of the protesters. Had people complied, this wouldn't have been a problem.
I think it's really a tricky situation to analyze. Historically, when we think about civil disobedience and protest, we, I believe, think of images of people being arrested, and that, from what I understood, is kind of the point of civil disobedience, right? We know intentionally that we are not following the rules, and so we willingly accept the consequences of that. So you set that aside, and I think that's fair and reasonable. If that's what you're choosing to do, I don't understand some of the viewpoints that, well, we should have no consequences.
Right.
We should be allowed to do whatever we would like to do. Yes, you can do that. Their consequences will follow, particularly on private property, particularly where there are student handbook guides that make it very clear what behavior will and will not be accepted. I am for peaceful protests. Yeah. I think in a lot of circumstances, we've seen it slew peaceful protests. There wasn't harassment, physical intimidation, verbal assault. These universities are in a bad situation of protecting people and also allowing universities to do what they do. This is what young people do. This is what they've always done. You either have to accept the consequences or alter your behavior to make sure you don't have to deal with those.
And it seemed to me like the Wash U protest in particular was individuals seeking attention. I mean, Jill Stein,
right?
This is a candidate for president of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
She just happens to show up in Wash U that day. By the way, she was in Kansas City protesting the next day.
Yeah.
And standing shoulder to shoulder with her is the president of the Board of Aldermen, who has, you know, always had left of center policies. Look, Megan Green and I both consider ourselves to be Democrats. I'm not a big fan of her policy. And so I'm trying to be somewhat objective. But when I see the president of the Board of Aldermen standing and willing to sacrifice her personal job for some injustice and death that's going on half a world away, but is mostly silent on the nightly murders that take place in St. Louis, it brings me some pause.
Well, I think it has long been concerning if you pay attention to local government. There seems to be a much bigger focus on the national issues that are going to get you some media attention. They're going to probably be a little bit better content on your social media account, as opposed to these very real, very challenging situations we know we're dealing with at a local level. To me, the difference is that you're a local elected official. We expected you to have a plan for the local problems. And when that is clear, it's really challenging and you maybe don't have the answers. I think it's natural for people to look other places where no one expects them to have the answer. They're just a voice. And so I think we're seeing that play out right now in St. Louis.
You and I work together. We do campaigns for a living.
Mm-hmm.
I saw the president talk yesterday. As a Democrat and someone supporting President Biden, who I think is far better than the alternative, I'm a bit concerned about what this is doing to the Democratic Party. Do you see these young folks taking their ball and going home and voting for Jill Stein or just not participating and causing this election to go the other way?
It's always a concern for people who work in our line of business. We know it's always been really disappointing, the lack of participation by young people. I have yet to see that one specific instance drastically changes the participation of young voters one way or another. I am concerned that this issue will get a few folks to stay home. Hopefully, cooler heads can prevail and we can think about what's at stake for our democracy and that some folks who are influential with young voters will get out there and really highlight how absolutely critical it is to reelect Joe Biden, even if you don't agree on every single policy. And I think that's where we need to get back to in general with our politics. We don't have to agree on every single policy, but foundational, basic, ethical, and moral beliefs are really a critical juncture at this time.
She's Megan Shackelford. You just heard why I like her. I'm Michael Kelly. We'll be back after this. You're going to meet my hero. Wait till you hear this story after this on KMOX.
KMOX Day at the Ballpark is this coming Wednesday.
A swing, and there it goes!
Get your tickets now, and you'll receive a John Rooney, Ricky Horton audio bobblehead.
That's home run number 700! Pujols!
KMOX Day at the Ballpark. Tickets on sale now and going fast at cardinals.com/theme.
Welcome back to KMOX. That's Megan Shackelford. I'm Michael Kelly. And Megan, you and I, about almost 2 years ago, received a phone call from one of our coworkers saying that there had been a terrible accident with someone that we work with. In fact, it happened on a Thursday evening. I was right here on KMOX that Friday morning when I found out about this, and we have a coworker. His name is Dr. Bryce Summery.
Yes.
And Bryce does polling and research, did polling and research for the Kelly Group and Show Me Victory, the companies that we work for. And he has a doctorate in polling, and he joins us in studio right now, and we're going to talk about exactly what happened. Bryce, welcome to KMOX.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you, Megan, for having me and allowing me to tell my story.
So it was all about 2 years ago. You were in Chicago for a polling convention. Is that right?
Right. For those of you curious, like Michael said, my name is Bryce Summery. I'm 40 years old, and I'm a below-the-knee double amputee. So my road as an amputee began in Chicago. I was attending a conference for work, the American Association for Public Opinion Researchers.
Bunch of nerds.
Yeah.
It was a bunch of nerds. I loved it. It was great. I felt right at home. So one night after the conference, me and my wife are walking down Michigan Avenue. It's a beautiful night. We're minding our own business. And then out of nowhere, a car that was running from the police, it ran a red light, hit another car, drove up on the sidewalk, and hit me from behind. It caught me totally by surprise. It ran me over both my legs. Thankfully, my wife narrowly missed injury, and I was injured pretty severely.
So Bryce, you're pinned at that point, correct? Like the car pins you to a wall, fortunately, it's happened on Michigan Avenue where there's lots of traffic, police officers, and even doctors and nurses.
Right. Luckily, it was right by Northwestern University, so there was actually some off-duty nurses that were able to come to my aid almost immediately, and they helped stop or stabilize me until an ambulance arrived. And then they took me to Northwestern Hospital, where I was in intensive care for about a week and a half. I mean, and I can remember, you know, being in the emergency room or being in the intensive care unit, and they would come in every day with this. I guess it's kind of like an ultrasound thing, but it would play. You could hear the blood flow in my legs, and they would come in every day, and I would remember thinking, like, please, please, God, let there be, you know, blood flow. But after about a week, the decision was made. Well, I mean, I had to okay the decision, but it became clear that my feet weren't going to be able to be saved. So that's when the decision was made to amputate both.
Yeah. And Bryce, then that also, and you were in Chicago, stayed there for several months because the surgeries happened in Chicago to remove your legs. How many surgeries did you wind up having to go through? You have a young family, two little boys, a beautiful wife. Talk a little bit about what that time was like.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think it goes without saying it was a traumatic experience. You know, my kids luckily weren't with me at the time, so they didn't have to deal with that early trauma. But, you know, I'm sorry.
Yeah, so you wind up going to the hospital. Mm-hmm. You wind up having surgeries. How many surgeries in total do you think you've had?
So I've had a total of 11 surgeries. So I had 10 surgeries while I was in the hospital. And then I had another surgery in September of 2023. I had a bone infection, osteomyelitis in my left leg. I had an abscess, so I had to have emergency surgery on that, which made surgery number 11. And after that, I was, you know, wheelchair bound again. I mean, really, for the first year of my recovery from May, really until May of the next year, I was completely wheelchair bound.
How much of your time did you spend in Chicago? So the accident happens in May, and you stay there for what, several months? Your whole family moves
up
there.
Yeah, so May 12th, the accident happened. You know, I spent a little over a month in Northwestern Hospital. Then I was transferred to Shirley Ryan Rehabilitation Center in Chicago, which is a great place. I received great treatment there. I was there for 2 weeks. After that, I was given the clear to come home, and that was around early July. I arrived back in St. Charles County, where I live, and then I began getting physical therapy at an SSM local therapy center.
And so at the beginning of summer, this happens, and by the middle of summer, you're back in St. Louis without both of your legs. Mm-hmm. Trying to figure out what life is going to be like going forward. And you went to rehab every day.
Right.
And your whole family participated in this. How did the boys deal with dad losing his legs?
You know, it's interesting. I'd like to believe, and I think my wife would agree, that the kids handled it pretty well. You know, at the time, I had a 5-year-old and a 2-year-old. The 5-year-old, I think he understood it a little bit better. The 2-year-old didn't quite understand what was going on. But what's interesting now is that, you know, I'll watch them play, and they've got like a little car thing that they use, and they'll be reenacting my injury. They love to play like, oh, look, Daddy, I got ran over by a car. So,
oh my,
I think that it's a little bit therapeutic for them to do that. Mm-hmm. So it's not so much that they talk about it, but it's the way they play. I think it helps them deal.
To be able to accept reality and also that there was moving forward. I think that's what is really sticks out to me is we've had other stories like this in St. Louis of people who have had similar horrible accidents via automobile, either crossing the street, walking, you know, there was a young woman who had almost an identical scenario play out that you did. And so we see these things in a headline. We hear about them in the news. We hear about them follow up. But what I think is really interesting for folks to understand is that there is a lot that comes afterwards. And it's a very long, complex process. And so when we see these things as local St. Louisans happening in our community, I think it's so important to understand that these have really deep and long impacts on people who are victims of these types of accidents. And so I think it's powerful that you're a local person who can share that, because it's not just a one-day incident. It goes on for years.
Right. It's changed. It's changed every, you know, every component of my life from getting, you know, before this happened, I was running about 3 miles every other day. And I went from that to needing help, you know, getting dressed, going to the, getting a shower and things like that. So, I mean, that was a major adjustment. But, you know, if I could, some of the things that I've learned from my experience is that, you know, the first thing for other people who may be going through a traumatic event like this and maybe not have had an amputation, but are going through struggles, is like one of the things that was important that I relied on is other people and the realization that I wasn't alone. Thankfully, I had good friends like you, Megan and Michael. You guys have been great and helped me through this. And I also relied on my family, and I'm in physical therapy, and they're a good source of encouragement.
And you're still in therapy to this day. Now, you have both of your prosthetics now, Bryce. That was a process, right? Did you ever think you were going to be able to walk again? And when they came to you and said, here are these prosthetics, how did you react?
Yeah, so another thing that I think will help other people in my situation or similar situations is, like, things do get better. I remember when I first got my legs. I got my legs in November of 2022. The injury was in May of 2022. And I remember putting on my legs and thinking, man, like, these are really heavy. Like, how am I ever going to walk? You know, how am I ever going to do the things I used to do? I want to run. That's my goal. It seemed like, I mean, I didn't think that I couldn't do it, but I remember thinking, wow, this is going to be harder than I thought, you know? But I took it step I mean, I'm not through my journey, but I've taken it day by day. You know, I've trusted my therapist, and I see the progress, you know, that I'm making. I started off with when I arrived in therapy, I was a pretty sad sight. You know, I had open wounds on both my legs. You know, I hadn't had a haircut, you know, in 3 months. I looked disheveled. Wasn't showering as often as I probably should have, but it's tougher, at least in that situation. But, you know, day by day, I believe that I would get better. I trusted my therapist. I started off with a walker, moved to a cane to keep me upright. Now I moved on to a cane to help me with balance, and I'm not done. My plan is to eventually be walking without a cane, and my ultimate goal is to run, because that's, you know, I want to get back to where I was as close as I can.
He is Bryce Sommer. You'll stick around for another segment with us. I want to talk about what life looks like going forward. He's Bryce Sommer. That's Megan Shackelford. I'm Michael Kelly. Back on KMOX after this.
In the know, on the go. Trust KMOX for local news that impacts St. Louis and the region. The voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Welcome back to the Hancock and Kelly Show. This is Megan Shackelford. I'm in for John Hancock with Michael Kelly. We are chatting with our friend and Michael's hero, mine too, Bryce Sommer. Bryce, you experienced this horrible injury a couple of years ago, and I've mentioned to other people that I was lucky to come visit you within the first, month that you were up at Northwestern. And while you were obviously still newly in this situation and navigating how this was going to look for you moving forward, I was so struck that you were the same Bryce to me. Your sense of humor was exactly where it had always been. And it really warmed my heart to see you bantering with your mother, you know, giving everybody a bit of a hard time, talking with me about all the shows that we love. And it struck me at that moment that I knew you were really going to come through this being your same self. And I was lucky enough to see a video of you speaking for Limb Loss Awareness Month, correct? Mm-hmm. That was in April.
Right.
And you gave a speech to some fellow therapy members out at your clinic. Do you want to tell us a little bit about how you came to the point to being able to give that speech?
Well, I mean, first I want to say that I still have a long way to go. And, you know, I'm not the end of my journey. But the start of my journey, one of the most important decisions that I had to make is that, you know, the events of 2 years ago in Chicago, like the actions of another individual, like led to the loss of both my feet. And as much as I prayed and cried and hoped that my feet were going to come back, I mean, that's in the past. That's out of my control. And like one of the decisions that I had to make is whether I was going to let the events of someone else that led to the loss of my feet. You know, I'd lost my feet, but the decision I had to make was whether I was going to let, you know, it cost me the rest of my life. And I made the decision I wasn't going to do that. I wasn't going to let this accident stop me from living my life to the fullest. And if one message I can get to other people in this situation is that if you're going through something like this, you know, you still have a lot to live for. And, you know, don't let this situation define you. Let it be the start of a new chapter in your life.
Yeah, I think that's so important for folks to remember. We've seen a lot of local stories here in St. Louis. Unfortunately, we had two women lose their lives leaving a concert. We had a young woman, Sinead Edmondson, have an almost identical situation to what you experienced. And for those of us who follow the news, we've seen her come back to St. Louis and see her progress. But what we don't get to see are those everyday struggles and the choice that you made to look forward and to really be positive and look forward to your life with your family and take control of that mindset. But as you do that, I'm curious what you want other people to know who don't get to see that daily path, who don't get to understand the ins and outs of that. What can we all do to be more aware of our own actions as drivers, as pedestrians, and how this is becoming a bigger problem? These are not as rare of stories as they once were.
Right. And there's been some reporting by the New York Times talking about the, you know, really the explosion of accidents involving motor vehicles and pedestrians. And we witnessed it in our own city here. It is an issue that deserves more attention, certainly. I mean, with the cars are getting bigger, and definitely more attention needs to be paid to pedestrians and their safety.
No doubt about it.
No doubt about it. Bryce, you're a twin, right? You have a twin brother?
A twin, yes.
Something funny that came out of this whole process. Can you tell us what you might have done?
Yeah, I mean, there's been some surprising benefits from losing my feet. I mean, one benefit is that with the prosthetics that I have, I'm now considerably taller.
That's the sense of humor I was talking about.
For most of my life, you know, I used to be 5'7", and I'm used to looking up at everyone I talk to, especially Michael. Although he's still taller than me. But yeah, I mean, I went from 5'7", and with the legs I have now, I mean, I'm closer to 6 foot. So I'm finally, like, looking down on other people.
Do you make sure in every, like, family photo with your brother that you're standing right next to him? What's up, little bro?
Yeah. Well, right. It's nice to finally be able to dwarf over him. You know?
Bryce, you're the strongest person I know. So not many of us could have gone through the injustice that you lived through 2 years ago and have the courage and the drive to do what you've done. You truly are a hero to so many people. I hope a lot of people listen to your message because it's applicable to people dealing with a lot of things. I wish you the best. I love you. And you are my hero. He's Bryce Summery, Mike Kelly, Megan Shackelford. We're coming back with Amy and Chris after this on KMOX.